everyone, and welcome back to Yellow Bee Pod. Thank you so much for tuning in to listen, and if you're new, then welcome. My name is Natalie and I'm the founder and host here. I created Yellow Bee Pod to highlight stories from East and Southeast Asian diaspora. I'm British born Chinese and I'm based in London. And thank you so much to everyone who shared and enjoyed the last episode with Evelyn Mock. It was a really, really fun one. If you haven't checked it out already, go ahead and download it so you can listen to that episode after this one. Thanks for sharing it on your Instagram story as well. I love that. And I love to hear more of your thoughts about your own identity and more. There's a huge amount that I want to talk about, so I'll just jump straight in. This episode is a Pride Month special, so later I will be featuring one of my good friends, Dominic Cronin, and he will be sharing his coming out stories as a gay man and also talking about minority representation. And we also talk about K-pop, so if you're a K-pop fan, stick around for that. I would love for you to join in the conversation. I know that this week has been hard for a lot of people, particularly with conversations around race and the Black Lives Matter movement following the death of George Floyd, an American and black man. I will be talking about this, but not in a completely full and in-depth way. It's really great to see how people have come together online to share resources, share information and solidarity. Even though it happened in America, there's huge amounts of movements in the UK. And as I'm recording this intro right now, there's a Black Lives Matter march happening in London. But first, before we talk about that, I've got a less important topic. Thank you so much for everyone who wished me happy birthday for last week. I had a blast. I really did expect this birthday to be a bit low key. Lockdown and quarantine restrictions are easing in the UK, but I'm still keen to stay at home. So I had a really lovely birthday at home and with my family, including my three younger sisters. I do normally spend time with my family on our birthdays, but it's not usually the main celebration and it's not the priority. We're more likely to do our own thing with our friends and then also have some time with family on the side. But even though we've been staying at home together, we often just do our own thing at home as well. So it was great to have my birthday as an excuse to properly all sit down to eat together. We had a big brunch. I made everyone in my family wear yellow, including my mum. I have three younger sisters. So yeah, the five of us were all matching and wearing yellow. Is that a bit extra? It is, but I love it. I forgot how much fun it is to get dressed firstly and actually put on makeup. It's been a minute. I was like really struggling to match my foundation. First world problems. And I love matching colours with my sisters. It only happens like once every 2 years, but it is fun. So yeah, I really, really forgot how much I enjoy that, but also how much effort it is. I'm kind of enjoying not having to get out of my pyjamas most days. And for my birthday, I also got a new microphone. So big thank you to my sister Jessica, who you may remember from episode 1 of Yellow Bee Pod. And yeah, she got me a great little microphone. So let me know how I sound. Still figuring out the best way to use it and also the editing, everything. So any tips, any experts, I'll be glad to hear your feedback. Another gift that I got was I got an Oculus Go, like one of those virtual reality headsets. Actually, I don't think I know anyone who has one. I mean, as far as I know, but I'm looking for ideas of what I should use it for. I've got some ideas already, but if you do have any ideas or if you have things that you wish you could try with a virtual reality headset, please hit me up. I don't game normally, but I'm open to suggestions. So please tell me, give me some ideas of what I should do with it. I don't know. One of my colleagues said that he would get up a virtual reality mountain so that he can pretend that he's outside when he's meditating, especially now during lockdown. Over the last couple of months, we haven't really been able to, you know, sit down and relax outside. So I actually think that's a really good idea. Yeah, I love that one. But yeah, please, more ideas. We're now in June, the 6th month of the year, can you believe it? And as May ended, I hit 1,000 listens last weekend. And now I think we're on like 1,300 or something, which is amazing. And it's a particularly amazing way to end the first month of this podcast. Really grateful for everyone who has tuned in to listen, who has enjoyed it, who's dropped me a message, and who has shared it with other people who might like it as well. To be honest, if I knew that hundreds of people, hundreds plural, were going to listen to episode 1, like me and my sister talking about our ethnic identity, quite a personal topic, and we're also talking about our childhood and stuff. Yeah, if I knew hundreds of people were going to listen to it, maybe I would have put a little bit more thought into it, but I'm still really happy with how it came out because it's a very authentic and genuine conversation. So the words on everyone's lips over the last week and more, and quite rightly so, is Black Lives Matter. I've seen, an incredible movement to start conversations and share resources on how to be anti-racist. So there's so many different ways that you can support, even if you're not going to protest. So you can sign petitions, raise money for where it's needed, write to your MPs, etc. And it's really great to be a very small part of a wider movement to protest racism and police brutality, which is quite frankly something we all need to get behind. I'm looking at a book in front of me now by Audrey Lorde. Well, it's a book, but it's a collection of poems and essays, and it's called Silence Will Not Protect You. And I think that's a perfect sentence for what we've seen over the last week. Just how I was talking about racism that affects East and Southeast Asian communities, particularly related to COVID-19 in an earlier episode. It's also important to talk about racism that affects other groups. It's important to note that we all have our influence, so we can use our platforms to share, even if it's just with acquaintances and extended family. I think it's really important for people to use their voice and not think that this is someone else's duty. I guess I've been a bit overwhelmed this week because I've also seen a lot of shaming. So if someone isn't overtly posting about Black Lives Matter on social media, like every time I go online, a different celebrity was trending on Twitter. Either they've spoken about the Black Lives Matter movement in a really great way, but more commonly if it's done something that people deem to be wrong. So for example, Emma Watson, the British actress, she shared a black square, or actually three black squares, on her Instagram page as part of hashtag Blackout Tuesday, time for amplifying and listening to black voices rather than promoting our own content. And people were just saying that it was like really trash from her. I guess she posted it quite late in the day, so people had been looking to see what she would say. But I mean, Emma Watson has been speaking about racism publicly, particularly in the intersection of racism and feminism. So she's been talking about white feminism for years, and she always shares her platform with black authors, etc. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me that people are using their energy to complain about her, to complain about a British person who isn't making the most sufficient contribution to the conversation, especially because she has been known to talk about these matters for years. And also, just because she's not posting about it on social media, we really have no idea what she's been working on this last week offline. And that's just one celebrity example. There's so many different celebrities. But again, I don't necessarily have the right. I mean, who am I to tell someone what they should care about or what they should tweet about? I really don't know what's right or wrong to say, but it has been quite overwhelming for me to see it over the last week. I guess I need to just spend less time on Twitter, really. But hopefully we can be empathetic to people who are, you know, they really are trying to be better, really trying to be anti-racist and useful in this movement, but maybe they aren't doing it perfectly. They're not quite hitting the mark. We've got a lot of empathy for the Black Lives Matter movement, black people dying at the hands of police, so hopefully we can also have empathy for people who are at different points in their journey to allyship and to be anti-racist. I would really like to see people being, yes, corrected, and I'm open to being corrected as well, but I think overall it's better to call people in rather than call them out. I ultimately think that would be better for the movement. Having said that, I understand that it's not my place to be tone policing people, and people absolutely have a right to be angry and expressing their emotions and frustrations in the way that feels right for them. Really glad to be part of the movement, a very, very small part, because even if it isn't our own experience, even if, like, I've never seen police brutality, I don't always recognize racism, particularly microaggressions against black people, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It definitely exists, there's no question about that. And it also exists sort of within people that we know and love. So we really do all have a part to play. I mean, there's so many resources being shared on social media this week. It's really incredible. And one in particular that I want to bring up, there's lots of different groups pulling together to translate explanations around Black Lives Matter movement and particular vocabulary into East and Southeast Asian languages, including Japanese, Tagalog, Thai, Cantonese, etc. So many different resources. Like, I have no idea how I would say, like, I don't know, white supremacy in Cantonese if I was talking to my mum, but having these resources can really help to push that conversation. And yeah, we all do have influence and opportunities to have, they will be hard conversations with people around us who may be less understanding of why Black Lives Matter is important, but those conversations are worth having, sort of especially if they're hard. And I know that a lot of people are saying, well, yes, but there's also racism against Asian Asian people, but that's not what we should be focusing on this week. I heard a great phrase, which was, "We are all in the same storm, but not in the same boat." And another quote from Audre Lorde. She was a black feminist woman, also a member of the LGBT community, so kind of the perfect person to quote for this episode. One of her quotes that I frequently think of is, "Remember, our sun is not the most noteworthy star, only the nearest." And I take that to mean, yeah, ultimately, it's down to perspective. So myself as a Chinese person, I might be super aware of the racism that affects Chinese people, and I might think it's the most important, but it actually isn't. It's only because it's the closest to me. It's my experience that I think it's important. And sort of remembering that with some perspective, we need to see sort of the experiences of others and what is actually more important to other people and more important in the grand scheme of things. So yeah, have the hard conversations. Something I'm noting this week is also to pick your battles. You can't change people who don't want to change or who aren't open to listening, and you need to protect your own energy within that as well. Something I've seen a lot over the last week that I do want to comment on is that in our fight to be anti-racist and also share the movement with people around us, there's a lot of people saying that we need to speak to our extended families, our parents, who may be more conservative. I'm wary that I don't want to get into this sort of trope of thinking that just because someone's older means that they're going to be more conservative, more traditional, or more racist, quite frankly. Just because someone's older, that isn't necessarily the case. If you have a conversation with, say, your parents, they might surprise you. And just because someone's older doesn't mean that they're set in their ways. They absolutely can change their opinions, and it would be a discredit to them to say that they can't change their perspective over time. Like, we're all ignorant in some ways at some point, and you don't know what you don't know. But I hope that I will continue learning and changing and being better throughout my life. And yeah, I think it's a discredit to assume that, say, our parents wouldn't also be able to do the same. I'm not saying that the conversations are always going to be easy, but yeah, definitely worth having. It's also important to look into ourselves. I think I said in the intro of the last episode that it's so easy to call other people racist. It's so easy to say that there's so much racism in America or in the police force, but we should really make sure that we look into ourselves as well to reflect and change our own behaviour, which may reinforce racist structure and institutions. So this has prompted me to revisit a book that I have a copy of. It's Me and White Supremacy by Leila F. Saad. It is a book that you're supposed to read, but that it also comes with journal prompts, so you're supposed to do the book, and it's like you need to be proactive and take an active step and actually do it. For me, I would really benefit from discussing it with other people. So if you also have a copy of the book, or if you've read it before, I know that I don't want to center about me at all, but I do want to do better, and I could really benefit from like being in a kind of book club. That's basically what I want, a book club, people to discuss it with and who can be open and frank. So if you're keen to do that, drop me a message on Instagram or Twitter or email at yellowbeepod, and the email is yellowbeepod@gmail.com. I'm never going to be the best ally. It's a lifelong journey, but I really want to do better, and I would like to grow with other people who are also on the same journey. This could have been a whole episode in itself. Something else I wanted to note was how so many of us are keen to do Blackout Tuesday and listen and learn from black voices. And something that some people that I follow have shared is that they feel conscious that a lot of people are suddenly coming to them looking for education and explanations, and also to relieve their own guilt, sort of white guilt, or actually sort of non-black guilt, to anyone who is not black, including myself. And some of my friends, they this is so bad, they said that they had people who they didn't really consider to be like good friends, but having non-black people messaging them to say, "I hope you're doing okay," to check in, to ask how they're doing, and actually to even to apologize. And they're not apologizing for anything in particular, they're just saying, "Sorry if I've ever unintentionally said something to hurt your feelings or to offend you." And it's just so ridiculous, because yeah, I just feel like there's a lot of non-black guilt at the moment, but maybe messaging people who are already going through a tough time isn't necessarily the best way to do it. Of course, we should be reaching out to those close to us, but only if you actually think it's appropriate. I'm trying to see it from their point of view. I also saw a lot of black voices on social media who are quite active in this space, and they said, "Does anyone else feel like that they've suddenly got thousands of new followers and they feel like they're under surveillance?" And maybe me repeating this shows that I was actually watching them to see what they would say. But I guess I can see where they're coming from, because their corner of the internet, their place on social media, isn't necessarily a tool for education for everyone else, for everyone who's not black. And they should still feel comfortable to post whatever they want, but they might, I don't know. There's a lot of pressure if you suddenly have a lot of new voices who might not agree with your opinions. So I guess that's something to be wary of as well, like in terms of when you are following black voices. Something that I'm thinking of over the last week anyway is, am I actually following them to learn and actually listen, or am I going to be confrontational if they say something that I don't agree with, or am I here just to relieve my own guilt? Yeah, I need to think about it some more, but it is something that's crossing my mind and something to be conscious of. So also this week, oh my gosh, there's just so much been going on this last week. It feels like it's been a month already since my birthday last weekend. So the UK government, they said that they weren't going to release this report that they've been doing, which is a inquiry into how Black Asian minority ethnic groups, so BAME groups for short, the effect of COVID-19 on BAME groups. So they said they weren't going to release it, and then they did release it, and there was a lot of information in there. And I feel like we already knew some of the headlines about how certain groups within BAME were more susceptible to death by COVID-19. I don't want to misquote it. But yeah, there was a lot of information, but not actually a lot of actions. Hopefully, now that this data is out there, it's public, people are talking about it. Yeah, hopefully the government will be accountable and will actually do something about it. Some ethnicities are more at risk than others, and that's going to be down to a whole bunch of different reasons. I want to mention Marsha P. Johnson, who was an activist and a really prominent figure and a black person in the Stonewall Uprising. So as we're talking about hashtag Black Lives Matter and also Pride Month this June, I'm going to be watching a documentary on Netflix called The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson, to learn more about her activism, her suspicious death, and also her legacy. So she was a key figure in the uprising that began 50 years ago. Well, yeah, last year was the 50th year, so 51 years ago, which was really the start being the modern day pride parades. I've got more to learn about the role of people of colour, and specifically black people within the LGBT+ movement, and that's what I'm going to be watching on Netflix at some point in the next few days. About to jump into the interview, and I would love to hear from you if you have any thoughts or stories that you would like to share. Again, Twitter and Instagram is at yellowbeepod, and my email is yellowbeepod@gmail.com. You can also get in touch anonymously if you would like. I would love to hear from you. Hi Tom, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right today. I'm not 100%, to be honest. I'm feeling a bit like overwhelmed with everything that's going on in the world. Plus, like trying to keep on top of my day job. I'm feeling a bit like anxious today. But I just want to be like honest and transparent about it, because sometimes people were just like, yeah, I'm fine all the time. But actually, you're not fine every single day.
Definitely.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm working from home as well. I'm not feeling that motivation anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
We should be honest about that. But then I also don't want my, like, boss to be thinking that I'm at home doing nothing.
Mm.
There's so much going on, we can't possibly expect ourselves. It's a lot of pressure to expect ourselves to be at 100% productivity.
But you know what? I've actually had that conversation with my managers on Friday. I just straight up went, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. And they're like, yeah, we understand. Like, it's okay. And that was a massive relief in a way, because I was like, oh, it's like a weight lifted off my shoulder. But this whole kind of coronavirus thing has kind of come at a really good timing for myself, because I've kind of always wanted to isolate from the world mentally to myself. So this this forced isolation has put me in a position where I can really think what I really want to do with my future, what really makes me motivated to get out of bed, to lit that fire. And it's been a really cool couple months, because I've been like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Starting things, like, I've always wanted to play the guitar, so I've got myself that. You know, there's that philosophical phrasing, in order to create, you must destroy.
Ooh.
And I've been kind of running that through my head a lot.
Tell the people who you are first before we get too carried away.
Okay, so thank you, Ashley, for introducing me. So my name is Dominic Cronin. Oh, so I do this like a dating profile. So
yeah, I was gonna say, you sound like you're introducing yourself on like Take Me Out or something.
So my name is Dominic Cronin. I am 23, Woo. A graduate civil engineer, and a wannabe pole dancer.
Hey, you are a pole dancer. There's no wannabe about it. If you want to be it, then you are it.
True. That's the thing. If you want to be it, you're not going to be it. You are it. I also like Ferrero Rochers. I'm craving that a lot. So if you want to take me on a date, anyone out there, just buy me a pack of Ferrero Rochers. Just put it out there. Thank you. Thank you, Natalie.
And you're also half Filipino.
I am. I'm half Filipino, half British.
I've got quite a few specifically half Filipino, half white guests lined up for my podcast.
Brilliant. Yeah, we're cool people. Cool people. You know, we're just chilling. We're the coolest people. That's why you pick us for your podcasts.
And this episode is a Pride Month special. So happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month.
We wanted to sort of frame this whole episode around your story as a mixed race, part Asian, gay man, and all the experiences that come with that.
Sounds fun. Okay, so whole backstory for me. I was born in Hong Kong, but I was only there for about 6 months. And then I was in the Philippines mm-hmm. for about a year. And then I moved to the Isle of Man for about a year. And then to Cyprus for about 6 years. And then England from, year seven up.
What's it like in Cyprus? I have some family who are Cypriot, but I don't actually know that much about it.
Oh, cool. Oh, Cyprus was amazing. So I was there between 4 and 11, and I lived in Akrotiri, which is the British base. So in order to get into Akrotiri, you need an ID, and you can get that ID by being a family member of someone who's in the Royal Air Force or a member of the Royal Air Force. So it's a gated community, so no one else can get in. There are guys with rifles by the gates if anybody gets in illegally, because it's British territory. But it was always sunny. Oh my God, that was the main thing. It was always sunny. When I moved here to England, I remember the change in weather. I got here and it was proper cloudy. And then my acne blew up. It absolutely blew up. And I got...
Wait, what does that have to do with the weather?
It's a coincidence. It's a conspiracy. My acne blew up as soon as I got to England. I'm saying it was because of the weather. Probably because of puberty. One of the biggest changes between living in Cyprus and Britain was school culture. The best way I can describe this is you knew everyone. Everyone's kids' parents was in the RAF. So if you knew a bad kid in your school, their parents would know about it. They would tell all the other parents and everyone know who's being that bully in the school. So this is not like some tiny school camp. There were a lot of kids and you knew everyone. It was quite a tight-knit community. When I came here, I suddenly saw everyone misbehaving. Why are you trying to purposely put yourself in detention? Why are you trying to mess up your career and your grades? And that ran through my head. And I realised the main difference was discipline. RAF parents are proper disciplined. They go through up to get to the RAF or any kind of military, vigorous, intense physical training. And that kind of inadvertently got pushed onto the children. Not that my parents were whipping me all the time, but I felt that discipline from my dad every day. That was the biggest thing coming to Britain. Get your head down, study, get good grades, and get a bloody career. Don't piss about and stop going to detention. It really winded me up. But also, because my mum's, Filipino as well. She's got that Asian whip towards me as well to become an engineer or a doctor. So I had the mixture of my dad, who was an RAF, and my mum, who was a Filipino-Asian disciplined woman. So,
Yeah. Which side do you feel like is more strict?
My dad was the disciplined one, but my mum, she hit me with a slipper if I did anything wrong. She got that
classic.
good slipper out and she whacked me. She got me on the ground and whacked me if I did anything bad. But I don't remember what I did that was bad. But doesn't matter. Does not matter. She got that slipper out. She got me good. But she never did it to my sister. She never slapped my sister with a slipper. It was always me. Those were some troubling times. So when I was in Cyprus, in my memory, I was the only kid who had an Asian background or any kind of person of colour background. And this was 20 years ago. So to get in the RAF, I had to be British. And there may not have been many people who were people of colour who wanted to be in the RAF and who also wanted to live in Cyprus. So it was a very small group of people compared to the population of Britain. But the weird thing was being the only kind of half Asian, I didn't feel any different. I never felt any racism towards me. I never felt I was insulted because of my race or I always felt included in groups. And I never even thought about my race. I never even thought, oh, I'm half Asian. It never crossed my mind. I was just a kid in the sun, happy.
Simpler times.
It was good times. And then when I went to Britain, it was like, oh, you're half Asian, or just you're Asian. I suddenly felt this exclusion because of my race.
Yeah.
And I just could feel the separation. You know, just my skin colour is differing, who I can't talk to. Because I was a kid, you know, in Cyprus, yeah. I talked to whoever.
It's interesting that you said that. Because sometimes people who are mixed race or sometimes like ethnically ambiguous, they never get seen as sort of mixed race. They might get seen as like you were, just being grouped in as Asian without recognizing that you have both heritages.
It's a really weird one. And I've thought about this for ages, like forever, because like my white side and I've got my Asian side. And when you look at me, my Asian qualities come out the most. And you also think like, oh, he's definitely not 100% white. So you're like, that guy is, you know, Asian or Spanish or something, definitely not British. I'm treated however I'm treated in person. Yeah, I also have that white side. I'm like, wait, what does my white side do? It's very confusing. Because when I was younger, I never got treated differently. I just never really think about my ethnic identity in a way. If I do, then it kind of sets me back. Oh, I can't talk to these people. My ethnic identity, it's weird because I don't have a lot of Filipino memories because of my relationship with my mother, reasons which we'll probably talk about later. I don't necessarily like to embrace my Filipino side.
Mm-hmm.
Love everything about the Philippines, but I haven't necessarily gone to it that much. And my British side, well, it's bloody everywhere, isn't it? It's here in Britain, but I tend to not think on my ethnic identity too much.
Yeah.
Just I'm chilling.
Yeah.
Underline.
Well, that's a good way to be. I think a lot of us would love to, you know, just go through life and be like a human being. But it is the case that people treat you differently depending on what they assume your ethnic identity is, not even your actual ethnic identity sometimes.
And if they don't want to talk to me because of my race, well then, oh well, that's their problem. They're missing out on me.
It's their loss.
I don't want to talk to them then anyway. They must, like, no, we must not have similar interests. So, oh well.
Yeah, you can't spend your emotional energy trying to be friends with people who are not interested in you. There's far better things to be doing in life.
Exactly. I lost my train of thought there. Year 7 to 9, hung out with the Asian group. I was in the Asian gang. I kind of separated away from them to hang out with other LGBT people when I started to realise my LGBT inside was coming out.
That's like a perfect segue. Thank you for setting that up. So how old were you when you identified as gay? Can you remember?
Yeah, so I can't necessarily give an exact age, but when I was younger growing up, I always thought differently. Like, I knew women were beautiful, and it was always, you know, it's always told that you're straight. Gay was never mentioned, so I never really thought about being gay. Year 7, and I started thinking about guys, and I was like, oh, these guys are looking cute. But then I thought, no.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen. Like, that gay doesn't happen. That's not happened. I had girlfriends in primary school. Oh my god, let me tell you, in primary school.
Dominic Cronin.
Let me tell you, honey. I was in this relationship for a year and a half, and we were popular. I was the popular couple in primary school. Nobody like
homecoming
could top
king
us.
And queen
Nobody.
Of primary school.
Like, we were the popular people. Yeah, I was dating this girl, she was in the popular group, and damn, no one could beat us. Yeah, so year 7, year 8, year 9, I'm liking guys, like, what, this is, I don't understand, like, because, you know, gay wasn't really in the media. Like, you did have, like, shows, I can't remember, there was a really big show on Channel 4, it had 2 seasons, if anyone knows what I mean, you know, then you know.
It could be anything. Well, you said it was on Channel 4 and it had 2 seasons.
Yeah. It wasn't. Okay, right. If you know, you know. But there was a series on Channel 4, 2 seasons. It was gay. And there was a lot of sex. A lot of gay sex.
That narrows it down.
So if you know, you know.
And if you don't know, you don't know.
Though you don't know, you don't know. Oh, well. Soz, your loss. I knew that show was there, and then something clicked inside me, and it happened. So in year 9, I went into a relationship with a girl. Gorgeous girl, beautiful. People knew about us. We weren't exactly the popular couple, but, you know. And then throughout our relationship, we were probably together for about 3 months, I was like, I'm not into this girl. Why am I not into her? I really want to be into her, but I can't. Why am I not into her? And I didn't want to kiss her. I didn't want to hold hands with her. Imagine, like, Violet from The Incredibles had a force field around her. I just couldn't, like, get through her force field, this mental force field. I just wasn't...
Love a Pixar reference. Okay, I'm trying to imagine it now. Force field, yeah.
I just can't. So then we broke up. And after that, I realised, yeah, I am a flaming homosexual. I am.
Love that.
G-A-Y, gay. I am gay. And after that relationship, me and her, Laura, we became best friends. And are still friends to this day. And she also came out as lesbian, so...
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. What a story. And you had a wild 3 months together, and now you're best friends.
3 months together, we realised... We hate the opposite sex.
And wait, how does that TV show that you mentioned come into this?
I just was mentioning it. I just knew it existed. Like,
oh, like in terms of like homosexuality in general?
Yeah, in media. Okay.
Representation is important in the media.
It is. It definitely is. I had my first boyfriend when I was 17.
Ooh.
Oh, God, I remember that. Ooh, my God, quiet. I was like, I'm not telling anybody.
At this point, were you out to your friends?
Ooh, coming out. So coming out to my friends. God, I remember this now. I came up to my friend Laura. Oh, yeah, I was 17. We were studying in the study room. And I turned to her. Hey, I'm gay. And she's like, I know. I know you're gay. This wasn't necessary. I know you're gay. And then I told my other friends, and they were like, yeah, we know you're gay. Why did this take you a long time to come out? Great, you guys know. You knew. Great, we can get this, like, whole kebabble mush thing over. Or we can be gay. So it was anticlimactic with them. Not that I wanted it to be, like, a drama. But it was just like, yeah, cool. My friends know I'm gay. Yes! The first person I ever came out to. So I was working in Nando's. Shout out to Nando's. First ever job, Nando's. Get that 40% discount Monday to Friday. Oh, miss it. God, I was just walking. I was probably walking a little bit camp, you know, probably doing my thing. And my coworker came behind me and went, are you gay? And I was 16 at the time, or 17. I literally felt like a brick wall had been punched.
Yeah, that's quite an upfront way to ask someone.
I felt like I was running. I was running. I was getting to the cliff and I was like, Dominic, you gotta fucking jump. So I fucking jumped and went, yes. Yes, I am. She went, cool. All right, nice. And I thought,
is that it?
I just felt like, oh my god, huh, cool. Back to cleaning plates. And that kind of prompted me to tell my friends, because I was like, yeah, it's normal.
But overcoming the barrier, taking that leap for the first time, and then, yeah, telling your friends who already knew.
Shout out to that girl. I can't remember what your name is. Shout out to you for making me courageous. But damn, you are brave asking me that. You are brave.
Well, you match the courage with more courage, so exactly. It's all good.
But coming out to my parents, that's a different story. That's a book from the library. That's a book that we're going to open. Jeez. Okay.
Story time. Open the book.
Okay. Story time. Here we go. I woke up one morning and I don't know what was going through my mind. But I woke up like, I'm coming out today. I'm doing it. Don't give a water bottles merino laundry ass. It was my monthly Nando's meeting. By the way, you have to meet once a month on a Sunday for a monthly Nando's meeting at 8 a.m. Yeah, so it was 8 a.m, so I had to wake up bloody early. Maybe it was the early morning that made me get up. Maybe it was the cold air. Maybe it was Britney Spears watching over me, wanting me to get out and come out. But I was like, I'm coming out this morning. And my dad offered to drive me there, because it's quite early. And I was in the car. It was like a 10-minute drive. In my head, I was saying, Dad, I'm gay. And I was like, opening my mouth, doing like, ah!
What do you think was blocking it? Was it like your brain telling you, like, no, don't say it?
It was something. It was like I was at the top of the Eiffel Tower, literally the top, the pin. Like, I'm on the pin, standing with one foot, ready to, like, I don't know, I'm manoeuvring around, ready to jump off. So then we got to the car park and we stopped. I'm sitting there like, ah. not literally like, ah, but in my mind I'm like, ah.
Like pushing, trying.
As I grab the door handle, I do this dramatic look at him. I'm like, Dad, I'm gay. And then he stops me from getting out the car. He's like, I've known since you were young and it's okay. And you don't need to be worried about it. I'm proud of you. And I went, okay, Dad, thanks. And as I got out of the car, I was tearing.
Oh, yeah.
Waterfalls. I was crying. I imagine, like, rocks just coming out of me. It was, like, a massive relief. I was like, thank God. Oh, my God. I was standing there for who knows how long in that car park, crying my eyes out. And because I was outside Nando's, my whole team crew were there and they watched me. And as I was walking, they just all came around me and just gave me a massive hug. I just came out. And they're just all hugging me, like, finally, because most of them knew, as long as you're okay. And then wipe my tears away. Then we started our meeting. And then during the meeting, your boy won Nando's Worker of the Month.
Amazing. You know, what a day. Worker.
That's my dad over with. My dad. Tick. Done.
That's such a wholesome story. Let's not rush off the set. Let's just appreciate that story, because it was another person he came out to who was also like, yeah, I know.
I know. I'm like, oh, Jesus. All that time stress when I was growing up, all that stress, that block in my head that didn't have to hide it.
Yeah, all that time, no wonder you had all these emotions pent up.
Yeah, like you have to act a certain way just so you don't give off your homosexuality. I was kind of camp anyway. Not that camp relates to being gay, but I think I was camp just because I'm an expressive person, regardless of my sexuality.
Yeah, you're a great storyteller.
Oh, thanks.
I'm really into this. I feel like I'm following this very personal story, but you're saying it in such like a dramatic way.
Thanks. I like to be expressive. And that's one thing that got pointed out before I came out as being gay, that I was camp. And that kind of shocked me in a way, because I wasn't really putting anything on or trying to be camp. But I always got told I was camp, and it really, like, got to me. I was like, no, I'm not gay. So then that I struggled a lot with trying to make friends, because I was like, oh, you're going to think I'm gay as well. On top of that, I'm also, like, different race to you. Who the bookcase do I make friends with? I think I remember sitting down with a teacher in year 8, and they were like, oh, so how's it going, you know, friends-wise? And I sat there and just bawled my eyes out, because I was like, I don't know who my friends are. I was, like, going around different social circles, saying hi to people, but I had no idea who my friends were, because I don't know if it was me, like my character, me being camp, because I was a different race. I just really struggled to make a lot of friends in year 7, 8 and 9. But then from year 10 onwards, I inadvertently made friends who were LGBT. Although we all didn't realise at the time, we kind of grew together.
Maybe there was something there that brought you together. Mm. Because maybe all of you, not to speak on your behalf, but maybe there was a sense of, there's something about us which isn't fitting into what other people expect or what other people want.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, finding your commonality even before you have the identity yourself or use any words to properly identify yourself.
Definitely. I remember I was in maths class, and this was like end of year 9, 10, and I remember there was this girl. I was like, wow, she's got bright coloured hair. Oh my God, her makeup is amazing. Wow, she's so cool. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to sit next to Alice. Wow, she's so cool. And right next to us was this girl who kept popping her head round and talking to Alice. And I was like, I'm friends with Alice. Who are you? And that girl turned out to be Laura, you know, my best friend who I dated. Laura and Alice were, like, into, like, Lady Gaga. You know, Lady Gaga, she's one of those LGBT icons and other LGBT things. So because I necessarily wasn't really exploring the world of LGBT, I kind of listened through them. And they also took the mick out of me because I didn't really have much of pop culture knowledge, because I grew up in Cyprus. Most of my childhood, which got cut off from a lot of pop culture today, which is another point, which I didn't know a lot of stuff about. I was like, who's Beyonce? Who's Britney Spears?
Oh, no way. Knowing you now, I cannot imagine that you were ever like that. Know. You love Lady Gaga. You love so many of these divas.
But growing up, I did not know about them. I was like, who? Who is she? Did not know her.
Who is she?
Who is she? Who the hell is she? Who is she? Can't stand her. So, getting to know them, they just introduced me to this pop culture world, and pop culture parts of it is related to LGBT.
Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think these, like, female pop divas like Lady Gaga, like Britney Spears, are so loved by the LGBT community?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. Well, best way to put it, I'm not, what do you call it, like, a literate in LGBT history and stuff. I can only say my experience and yada, yada, yada. But with being heterosexual, males especially, you are kind of put up to this standard where you have to act masculine and not show your weak side. And that comes in certain ways. That does come again with like a bit of toxic masculinity. When you realise that you're gay or exploring your sexuality, any way, not just gay, but any exploring sexuality, you kind of break that mould. You break that expectation from a lot of people around you about what people expect from you. You realise you're not heterosexual. You realise that I can't get married at the time, you know, before. You know, I can't get married or I'm not going to have kids. So then you just don't follow this expected life from you.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of explore myself and not have to follow what people think of me. And then your feminine side. So then a lot of gay men just explore their feminine side because they feel free, creative, to explore that their feminine side. You know, a lot of female idols, they express this. They express their femininity, their creativity, and they have good pop music. They produce bangers for days that you can pop your ass to in the clubs, because clubs are a really big thing for the LGBT culture, because clubs were the way for gay men back in the day, you know, 60s 70s, before gay was legalized. It was a way for people to meet up with each other, you know, dance with each other, and still is to this day. Since clubs, they played pop music, and Madonna in the 80s. Madonna. Oh, I wish, you know what? I wish I could go back to the 1980s and dance to Madonna in the clubs. If I had a time machine, that's one thing I'd want to do. Apart from experiencing the HIV pandemic, which is horrible, I just want to experience Madonna in the clubs in the 1980s. Like, so that's kind of why a lot of us see female idols. Over time, now that gay is, not just gay, you know, other sexualities are being normalised, maybe we'll start to see other types of different idols, not necessarily female, that will, maybe male, that the gay community will start to love. I still think female idols will be the top ones.
No, that's good. Obviously, it is a bit of, like, a trope, like, it's a stereotype, but it does exist, so, yeah, it's nice to get your opinion on it, because sometimes we just take it as, like, a given. It's just like, yeah, these certain singers have huge LGBT followings.
Mm. There are a lot of male idols that are getting a lot of traction in LGBT. Say, like, Lil Nas X.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
He came out as LGBT.
He's a bit of a Twitter icon as well.
Yeah, he's viral. Are there any icons, music icons, that you love, regardless of their LGBT or not?
So my big ones is definitely Britney Spears.
What?
I feel like we all grew up loving Britney, you know, back in, like, the year 2000. She was top, top. And then at some point during, you know, 2007 era, when I was a teenager, I really felt like she was the underdog and not getting the support that she needed and deserved. And then that's when I became a ginormous Britney fan. And she was still producing bangers then, like the Blackout album and the Circus album were, yeah, amazing. I hope she's doing okay. Sometimes I check in on her and I don't think she's doing okay. Like, just from her Instagram posts.
You know, actually, you know what? Britney Spears' Instagram is iconic right now. It is a safe haven. It is a place that everybody needs to be right now.
Yeah, she's just strutting in different outfits.
She's walking in her, like, you know, outside in a floral dress. She's chilling. She's chilling.
I hope she is.
Oh yeah, we all hope she is. We all hope she's okay.
Sometimes I just worry about her. Like, I'm also a massive fan of Rihanna, but I don't worry about Rihanna. Sometimes I actually lie in bed and worry about Britney. Also Ariana Grande. I worry about Ariana Grande a lot.
Oh, same.
She could be hugely problematic and that, yeah, she, like, cultural appropriates, etc. I still am a fan, not going to lie. And someone pointed out that, well, this was before lockdown, that she, like, never has a holiday, that she's got work posts on her story every single day. And once they pointed out to me, the whole of the next year, I never saw her have a day off. And that's when I really, yeah, I worry about her sometimes. I genuinely think she's going to join that 27 club of celebrities who die when they're 27. So if everyone could do a quick prayer circle, I'm not religious, yeah, but pray to the Holy Spirit, right? Hopefully Ariana Grande will be all right.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I've been bopping to Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande's Rain On Me. Have you?
That is a banger.
Yeah, it's a banger.
I have. I was listening to it in the shower earlier. It's actually a banger. And they knew what they were doing, releasing it just before Pride Month.
They knew what they were doing.
Icons.
They knew. Lady Gaga knew what the gays wanted, and she gave it to us.
Plus the K-pop collaborations are also on her album. I'm not surprised you haven't mentioned this already. We could have done a whole like recording conversation episode just about this album.
Natalie, Lady Gaga and Blackpink on the same song. Natalie, are you kidding me? Are you... Oh my God. This is like every K-pop person's dream. I mean, firstly, the song is a banger. If you haven't listened to it, Sour Candy. Let me say that again. Sour Candy. Yes, Sour Candy.
Look
Lady
it up
Gaga,
on Spotify
and
now.
Blackpink. It is a bop. Regardless if you like Lady Gaga or Blackpink, it is a bop. That I would, hands down. Done. And, I mean, come on, K-pop. I mean, girl, what K-pop groups were you into?
Oh, wow. So I, like, my main part time when I was really into K-pop was, like, 2010 to 2012. In terms of girl bands, 21. The number one, no doubt, was 21. 100%. CL, the baddest female. I don't know what it was about K-pop that really drew me in, but it was Big Bang who I was into the most, and then 21, the band who were on the same label. So, yeah, 21 for top girl group.
Mm. For me, I was listening to K-pop from 2012 to now. I still listen to it. And the girl group that got me into it was Wonder Girls and their song, Nobody.
Wonder Girls, that one's a classic. That's like their most famous song.
Honestly, iconic. People don't know them that well to this day, but I remember when I started 2012, Wonder Girls, they were it. Girls' Generation, 21, Sistar, 4 Minute.
Sistar was a banger. 4 Minute created bangers. It. Wow, you're really bringing out the throwbacks. I love that stuff. It's weird because I'm not really that into K-pop now, but my younger sisters are, and I sort of opened the door for them at a young age to become really, really into... I don't even know who the fuck they're listening to now. Because they just tell me that like, BTS are old, not old, but not the hot new thing.
I thought they started...
and then Twice dropped a new EP today.
Oh, I've listened to it. I listened to it the minute it dropped. Yes. I listened to it. And it, you know what?
The minute.
Whoever's listening to it. More and more Twice. It is... A bot.
More and More by Twice. Yeah, new EP just dropped this week.
Dropped. I mean, it's what now? It's like Blackpink, Twice, Red Velvet, Luna, hashtag Stan Luna because they are iconic. I don't necessarily listen to boy bands. I did in second generation, but third generation I don't necessarily listen to. Well, I guess with K-pop in general, firstly, it's like in a different region. It's like... It was a way for us, a lot of people just to kind of move away from our own culture in Britain. And kind of listen to something outside. And also it was like a community as well that kind of like weirdly felt like outsiders as well. It's like a community we could get together and just listen to music.
Yeah.
But also, for me personally, I don't know about a lot of people as well, but it was also Asian. Like, it was something that was like Asian and they were cool people. People I could really relate to. Like, yes, they were South Korean, I'm half Filipino, but they were like Asian people, which I thought, oh my God, they're cool dancers. I could be a cool dancer.
Yeah.
I
100% felt that way as well. So I got into K-pop when I was like 16. And at that point, I was like full nerd out. Like 100% nerd. And then something about K-pop and the way that they were like, they were Asian, I'm not Korean, but like you, I still sort of related in that way. And they were like the most cute, the most desirable, the most sexy, that the way that they're portrayed. Plus they all have like their matching perfectly synchronized dance moves. Something about that made me realize like, oh my God, this could be me, even though I have no singing or dancing talent. But still, there was something about it that made me feel like, you know what, this is for me. You're making me want to get back into it now. I don't know why I dropped off. I just couldn't keep up. There were just so many bands all the time. And because they have like new albums, new EPs, new comeback much more frequently than like British or American artists, sometimes it's hard to keep up. Also because the band members are getting younger and younger with every new group. Mm. Sometimes I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh, I can't keep following these 14-year-olds.
I'd say this generation now, for me, might be the last I might listen to because a lot of people this generation are like my age or just a bit younger. And then, like you said, a lot of new groups who are like, who start out now are going to be 16. And they produce music for like, you know, 16-year-olds. And I don't know.
But we might get that. Like the second wave. So the people who I was really into at the beginning, like Big Bang, they've all come out of their 2-year National Korean Army conscription. Is that the right word for it? And they were supposed to have a comeback this year and they were supposed to play at Coachella. Well, 4 of the 5 members of Big Bang.
controversy.
Oh, controversy. One had to drop off. Ooh. Just drop off the face of the media sphere.
The world, everyone, no one cares about him anymore.
Yeah. So I really hope they still have their big comeback, even if they don't have like the same festivals planned.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm looking out for them. If anybody here is a K-pop lover or wants to listen to K-pop, three songs which I love. Love, love, yes. Love, love, love,
hit
love,
us with
love,
the recommendations.
Love. Luna, So What? Beautiful. Yep.
So What by Luna.
So What by Luna. Wonder Girls, Why So Lonely?
Ooh!
Released 2016. It was when they were a band. Amazing. And finally, my third song, I'd have to say, is Blackpink, As If It's Your Last. There, I said it. I said what I said.
Your top three recommendations to K-pop. Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
That's a good mix. For any Blackpinks out there, yes, As If It's Your Last may not be their best song, but it's a summer song I can bop to, and it's not as banging as the other ones, but As If It's Your Last is my one. Shout out to any Blinks out there, or any Orbits, or anything. You know, I'm getting a bit nerdy now, but I just love being a bit nerdy.
Love it, K-pop.
Definitely love K-pop.
Let's loop back round. We got to the point in your coming out stories where you had told your friends.
Oh, yeah.
You were out at Nando's. You were out to your dad, but not yet to your mum. How old were you when you came out to your mum?
So it was the same day that I came out to my dad. So I was 17. Yeah, so I came out to my dad in the morning because I was working at Nando's most of the day. I didn't come back till late, so about 7 o'clock. And one of the things my dad said to me before I left the car when I came out to him was, don't tell your mum, we've got to figure a way out to tell her. But girl, I was on a roll. I was like, I just came out to my dad. No one can stop me. No one can tell me nothing. I'm like a bulldozer. I'm going down a hill. You can't stop me. Nothing can stop me. So we just had our dinner, little din-dins. My mum, she was sitting in the living room, and I came to sit down the couch near her. I'm looking at her. And my mum was like, Mum, I'm gay. And I'm like,
couldn't get the words out again.
Because I know my mum, she's Filipino. So I know she's got that religious background.
Catholic.
I got christened when I was younger. And that whole thing about, you know, Asian parents not accepting LGBT, I read all about it online. And I was so scared, especially when I was younger, that I was going to get kicked out. But I knew I was going to go to uni in a year and I was going to move out. So that kind of confidence was in my back. I was like, even if my mum kicks me out, first I've got my dad, but also I can go somewhere. If my mum disowns me, doesn't matter. I'm confident right now. At that moment in time, I did not give a shit whatever my mum was going to do to me. But I was still scared.
Yeah, like, understandably. I did not give
a shit, but I was scared. I was really scared, but I didn't give a shit. It was weird. So I looked at my mum. I said out loud, Mum, I'm gay. She looked at me. She looked at me with the most disgusting, scared, angry stare. She looked at me like I was nothing, like I was just a piece of gum at the bottom of your shoe, like a piece of trash. Just looked at each other for about half a minute, 5 minutes. It felt forever. And then she was like, why? And the way she said it was so angry. It was like, why?
Was she actually asking for an answer, or was she just saying it?
I don't know what she wanted. She might have wanted an answer, but what I said back, I said, because I am. Stood up, walked to my room. Bye, done with this, I said. And I sat in my room, and I realised, I wasn't crying, and I wasn't even angry. I was disappointed. I was disappointed that my mum reacted that way, that she would talk to her own son like that. As I sat in my room, I could hear my mum and dad arguing. I can't remember the exact words, but obviously it would have been like, he's gay, blah, blah, blah. And my dad telling her to calm down. And then I heard her crying, having a crying fit. And just got more and more disappointed and just angry over it. Since that day, we've never talked the same. Like, I never really talked to my mum much anyway. You know Asian mums, it's very concise conversations.
Like, she's not as expressive as you.
Yeah. Since then, I don't really talk to my mother that much. And our relationship is non-existent. And I'm not angry, I'm more disappointed that kind of got to where it is. I don't really see myself fixing that relationship. But coming out from it, I respect her views. I respect that she saw it that way because, you know, she grew up in the Philippines. It's a very heavy religious place. LGBT is not a thing there, so she wasn't exposed to it. And she probably, what she wanted was, you know, grandchildren, you know, for me. She wanted me to marry someone, perfect life, so she could be a grandmother and show that off to her family back in the Philippines, to show off.
Yeah, perfect being heterosexual, marrying a Catholic woman,
yeah,
and having a family. Yeah.
I'm grateful for her that she, you know, she moved from the Philippines, moved away from her family, and came to a place where I, growing up, have all these opportunities to really grow in my career, really experience, really earn money for my own living. So I am grateful to my mother for a lot of things, and I respect her, but unfortunately our relationship would just never, as it was, it wasn't much, yeah, anyway, but it won't never fix it, which is sad. It's sad, but it's whatever. Yeah. And I realized a couple of weeks after coming out to my parents that I came out a day after National Coming Out Day.
Oh, really?
So
what a coincidence.
It was just written. It was a coincidence. Maybe that was running through my mind when I woke up that morning. I was like, it's the day after coming out day. Hurry up. Come on, brain. Go, go,
it's
go.
It's not
go.
Too late.
Not too late. Come on. Do it.
That's phenomenal. When you speak about your relationship with your mum in such a positive way, even though it must have been very, very difficult. And it's only how many years since then? 5-6 years?
5-6 years, yeah. It's kind of just how it is in my life, my perspective. That's just how it is. And my mum's opinion of me may improve, but it won't change. And I can't change that. She has to go through her own journey herself. I need to put my own efforts and time into ensuring that I can create my own future, my own career, because I don't want to rely on my family for my own career anymore. You know, I'm living in London now. I don't want to have to mix up with these like arguments over who I am. I just want to figure out that myself and build my future for myself. And being angry at my mum, it's firstly a waste of energy for myself, but it's also, I can't be angry at her. She's got to go through her own stuff herself.
So in your journey to create your own independent life, you've just had to almost accept that the relationship with your mum is going to continue to be tough.
Yeah, tough. And I knew that when I was coming out to my parents. I knew that after this, my life is just going to be different. And going to uni, like, was that? Yeah, that's my ticket to out of here, to Brighton, to out of this small town. It's my ticket out of here. Not that I knew I was getting myself into. I knew the ramifications of coming out to my parents.
Yeah, that makes sense. But having said that, some of the responses that you had when you came out did surprise you, like from your friends and your dad, who said, oh yeah, I know. So it's not impossible that your mum could have also surprised you, depending on sort of what your initial expectations were. And I do think that a lot of us, with a lot of things, not just with LGBT, we might think, oh, you know, it's just not how it is where they're from, if they're immigrants, or they're set in their ways, etc. But even if people are old or older, doesn't mean that they can't learn. They can sort of change their opinions over time. It's not impossible. And that might not be the case for like you and your mum, but as in, we shouldn't just leave it and accept, oh, they'll never change. And I think that's a sentence that people say a lot when speaking about their parents' generation or their grandparents' generation. We always hear people say, oh, they'll never change. And actually, we can expect more of them than that, because you have to try sometimes. But also, while looking after yourself and accepting that, yeah, you are an independent man, you have your own life. And if your mum doesn't support that, then that's her loss.
I believe one day that, like you said, I will believe that my mum will change, and maybe we will talk properly one day. But for now, I got deadlines to do. I got deadlines here to finish. I got money to earn. I got the guitar to play. Yeah, I got, am I going to go on a date? Is anyone ever going to date me? Am I ugly? I got all these things running through my head, girl. But I probably will talk to my mother one day. One thing that also ran through my head, not to end on a negative note from this, but one thing that's running through my head, when I'd visit home sometimes before, during uni, why are you gay? Just out of nowhere. And I'd just be like, oh my God, I just want a biscuit. I came to the kitchen to get a biscuit.
Yeah.
I don't need this right now. I don't need you asking me this. But I'm here, I'm in London living it up. You know,
you are.
I got my gay Asian friends. Let me tell you, I was on a night out was a gay pub crawl by yourself, you know, new friends, going from pub to pub to pub, got to the last pub. I look over to my right. Are those a group of Filipinos? Are those Filipinos? So I walked up to them like, Kumustaga.
Like, what does that mean?
Means hello or how are you in Tagalog.
Tagalog.
Please don't drag me. Any Filipinos that are listening, please don't drag me. So it's when I'm like, Kumustaga. And they're like, oh my God, a Filipino. Got along with these Filipino, gay Filipinos. Koreans, you know, mention K-pop. Ooh, whenever I meet a South Korean, they hate K-pop. They don't like it. They're like, no. And I'm like, what?
Maybe they want their country to be known then more than just that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, true. That's a good point.
But also, K-pop is great, but, you know, not everyone is a fan of it. Not everyone has to be.
Yeah. But there's that weird feeling, you know, when you're on a night out and then just another, like, you know, Asian gay, it's on their own, or who wants to talk, and you suddenly have this weird connection.
The Gaysian connection.
Yeah, you're just like, I don't know, it's like you understand each other. You can just talk about whatever. That's what I love. Can't wait to go clubbing after this whole corona thing ends.
I know. Actually, I'm not missing it as much as I thought, but the first night out after lockdown is going to be an absolute madness.
Wild.
It's going to be
I'm
messy.
I'm going to be Kim Kardashian with a bottle of vodka, just shoving it in my face.
As well as there being discrimination against the LGBT community within Asian communities, there's also discrimination against Asians in the LGBT community, which is sort of where the phrase, even I know this, the no fat, no femmes, no Asians comes from.
No fats, no femmes, no Asians. Jesus. That phrase was bigger back in the day. Basically, it came from, there's this app called Grindr.
We love a dating app.
Hookup app.
Or just mainly hookup.
Or dating app. Or just it's mainly a hookup app. Back in the day, like years ago, like 2010, people would put no fats, no femmes, no Asians on their description. So that's where it all came from. You don't find that as much because you would get hashtag cancelled if you ever did that. Firstly, it kind of comes, there's that saying of like preference. You know, people have different preferences, which, you know what, I can totally understand. You have preferences, but you don't really need to push that onto other people and suddenly be like, yeah, I'm not into Asians. By the way, boy at the other side of the club who's Asian, I'm not into you. So by the way, don't flirt with me. But I also think about, like, in this culture in the UK, the majority of race is Caucasian. So we get to see a wide variety of Caucasian people. But with Asian community, Black community, it's more of a minority. So we don't really see a big variety of those in our day-to-day lives. When someone says they don't have a preference for a certain race, it possibly because they haven't really experienced a lot of people from that race. Let me tell you, oh my God, there are so many Asian men. I'm like, what? I'm on Instagram like, where is this Asian man? Where is he? Get him to me now. Where is he? And he's obviously on the other side of the world.
Yeah, these communities must exist, but maybe they're just hidden. Or maybe like the LGBT community and the movement as a whole is so full of, specifically out of all the letters, G, gay men who are white.
Yeah. In itself, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that it's full of white men.
But other people exist as well.
Yeah, other people exist. Please don't treat me less because I'm not the majority. It's just like, I don't mind that racially I would be the minority. Maybe I'm even more of a minority because I'm mixed. Don't mind that.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Like, you're like a minority within a minority within a minority. As in, you are a mixed race person within the BAME or people of colour group within the LGBT community.
Yeah. Like, do I have a voice with the Caucasian community? Do I have a voice with the Asian community? I don't know, because the Caucasian community wouldn't really want to listen to me anyway because I don't look Caucasian. And then the Asian community, I don't really talk Filipino. sorry, people out there, I don't speak Tagalog or Ilocano. It's horrible.
There's no shaming here.
Horrible. I should.
You can be Filipino even if you don't speak a Filipino language.
Yeah. So...
Accept it. This is your identity. You can claim that for yourself. Don't let another person define your ethnic identity for
you. True. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you. I just wish I did speak Tagalog. So I've kind of found that my niche is gay Asian men that I can hang out with. English speaking gay men. That's right. Who I get along with the most.
As in, as mates or as more than mates?
Oh, as mates. As mates. But as more than mates? Girl, I have no filter. As long as you look after yourself physically, you know, you put time into yourself. As long as we can, like, go on cute adventures. Oh, you know what? Any guy listening, my favourite dates, you know, are just finding a new pub in London, finding a different activity in London, you know, going on Groupon, just doing whatever.
And Ferrero Rochers.
Thank you very much. Forgot about that. Ferrero Rochers.
Yeah. But it's great that you found your very specific community. So the people that you find that you fit in with the most are English-speaking, Asian, gay men.
Yeah, obviously I get along with other people, but those, once they pop up in front of me, I'm like, whoa, we get on like wildfire.
Yeah, you did say before, you feel like you have a connection.
Yeah, it's just bam. We're like, what? Like, where have you been my whole life? Like, what?
That's the best feeling when you meet someone new and you feel like you've known them a long time. You understand each other. That's such an amazing feeling.
Do you want to cover one more thing?
Is this a quiz? Go on.
LGBT, do you know what it stands for? Okay, so L.
Lesbian.
Lesbian. G.
Gay.
B.
Bisexual.
T.
Trans. So a lot of people say like the LGBT plus, right? And sometimes they say LGBTQ, and that plus, it has a whole bunch of other identities in it. Yeah. And they shouldn't be forgotten as well. Sometimes the LGBT movement is predominantly the G, gay. But actually, we need to be talking about all of these.
So the full abbreviation is LGBTQQIAAP. So it's L, lesbian, G, gay, B, bisexual, T, transgender, Q, queer or questioning, I, intersex, A, ally, A, asexual, P, pansexual. That's the full brief, if you were to expand that. Some say there's more letters, some say there's less letters, but that's kind of the, I say, generic, well-known expansion of the plus. And the one that I guess most can relate to the most is A, ally. Ally is those that support the LGBT community.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's really key to highlight that, like, allies are part of the community too. And if anyone listening doesn't know what any of those abbreviated letters are for or mean, Google it. You've got the world at your fingertips. Google it, find out, educate yourself, learn, be better, seek out voices from those communities.
Have fun Googling it. Honestly, you'll have a ball. You'll be like, let me tell you, there are flags for different types of community in the gay community. There's a flag for bears, a flag for twinks, a flag for lesbians. There are so many flags. And fun, little half an hour, little break, Google LGBT, and then Wikipedia page has everything.
Not just so the flags. Rainbow flag for the Pride Month and LGBT community as a whole, but different flags for the different subsections of that community. So good.
Asexual flags, trans flags, non-binary flags. Ooh, girl, the flags are everywhere.
And there's also a flag that they use to incorporate black and brown stripes to represent people of colour within the community. And this is something that they have started using more and more now. Lots to learn. Every day's a school day, and we can Google this stuff. We shouldn't always be looking for someone else to educate us, because we can do it ourselves.
Every day's a learning day.
Every day's a learning day. Every day's a school day. Where can people find you online?
Y'all can find me on Instagram, DominicVin_. Dominic, V-I-N _, my Instagram. If you're a cute boy, you want to have a little chit-chat, slide into my DMs. Follow me.
Fun, amazing. Thank you so much for joining me, Dom. I hope you had a fun episode. And again, happy Pride Month. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. Pride Month. Great.
A fun episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I just enjoyed editing it. I'm not 100% convinced that I'm using my new microphone in the best way. I need to look into it some more, I think. But I don't know, you tell me, how do I sound? Do I sound all right? I also saw this week that the hookup app Grindr, they removed their ethnicity filter. And I think it was related to all the Black Lives Matter conversations that are going on. But they removed the filter that Hinge also has, where you can select or filter out certain ethnicities, which in itself is a bit problematic. But I think some people of colour do prefer it, because then you can find like the other people of colour, especially if you're in an area where there are not that many of you. Also, shout out to all the K-pop stans who have been taking over hashtags commonly used by white supremacists. So alongside the Black Lives Matter movement, there's people who respond with, you know, hashtag All Lives Matter or hashtag Blue Lives Matter for the police, and these are normally used by people sometimes out of ignorance, but sometimes white supremacists. There was also a hashtag Whiteout Tuesday in the last week, which was to counter the hashtag Blackout Tuesday. Yeah, K-pop stans just completely took over the hashtag so that the entire feed would be full of videos of K-pop idols dancing and singing. It's just so funny. They really are a powerful force, and they're using that force for good. They do a huge amount of charity work, and I guess this is just their latest good deed for society. Also in America, the police forces who were requesting the general public send in videos of people protesting and sort of committing crimes because they wanted to punish them, I guess, for protesting. But instead, K-pop stans again took over and just sent in loads of pictures and videos of K-pop stuff, which is hilarious. And honestly, this feels like those two worlds are colliding, and it's really, really weird. But hey, this is the world that we're living. We're living in Black Mirror season 6 or whatever people are saying. Enjoy the rest of your day, and if you aren't already subscribed, go and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss our next episode. Thanks for listening to Yellow Bee Pod. It's your girl Natalie, and I'm out. Bye.